IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome once again to episode 77 of the Killing It Podcast. I'm Carl, joined as always by Dave and Ryan. So, Ryan, you're back. You're back from the lake. You're in your four walls again.
I am in my four walls, and as my definition of a successful vacation goes, I was in the sun and did not get sunburned. And that, hey, when I come back, I slathered with all the sunscreen, and I came back from being on the water in 100 degrees, and I'm not in pain at all. I count that as a successful vacation. That's what you call diminished expectations.
Welcome to 2020.
Right. We used to have these big grand visions of travel and vacation. We're like, oh, I went outside and didn't burn. It's 2020 for you.
Exactly. And Dave, you guys went wandering on the holiday?
Yeah, we went long weekend. Sharon and I drove out to the Eastern Shore of Maryland and put the bikes in the back of the car and did the same sort of thing, got outside a little bit, had some good food, had some not so great wine. But it was a non-working weekend, and the weather here was great. We're not dealing with the same sort of stuff you guys are dealing on the West Coast.
Well, my great joy on Labor Day was I didn't have to work on Monday, so I got to stay home. So
just hopefully in a different square foot of home.
Yes. I went to the left side of my office. So, but anyway, yeah. So now we're dealing with the fires, and with luck, by the time this drops, the fires will be on their way out. So we're going through it here in the West.
Here's hoping. I'll try and send some of the rain we have on this side of the coast your way, because that'll really help.
Yeah. Well, it always is like it's flipping a switch. Suddenly, you know, nobody talks about fire or smoke or rain or anything.
And to continue our weather report observation, all I can say is God bless those folks in Denver, Colorado this week. I lived there for many years. And, you know, the old joke is you can experience all four seasons in Denver in a single day. Sunday was 101, Tuesday was 33, and it snowed. And I was like, yep, it's all normal, nothing to see here.
It's the way it should be. This is to be expected.
Just another day in the Rockies. So, all righty, let's do a show. Very good. So our first topic today is, are your smart devices going to be used in evidence against you? So a couple of weeks ago, we talked about how AI apps might theoretically get you out of a parking ticket or help defend you in court. Well, now the question is, and there's a lot of pieces to it, but can Alexa be your alibi, right? Is all of this data that's being gathered on you something that you could take to court and say, well, see, here I was sitting in my living room and I was talking to Alexa, or I was walking in front of my Ring doorbell and I've got all of this evidence as my smart home monitors me and sort of keeps track of where I am, so I couldn't possibly have been out robbing a bank. And you know, the pieces of this are, first, should we do it? Right? That's always a huge step in the right direction. Should we go down that road? And then second, how do we know that this has not been tampered with, or that, you know, I can legitimately send you off to a cloud and you'll get the goods on where I actually was. And then third is, like, and you know, in terms of my rights and so forth, do I really want everything to monitor me to the point where there are actual timestamps on what I did every minute of my life?
Yeah, every minute of every day. And again, so one rule of thumb I use is when the non-technical press starts getting into these conversations, you know that it is across the chasm, it is a mass market conversation. I read about this in USA Today, of all places, over the weekend. And they were talking about steps that you can take to minimize the things that your smartphone can tattle on you about, right? Your original question here was, will it be used in evidence against you? Yes. Will it be used as evidence for you? I don't think so. I think that the machine is going to favor one side over the other. And because, to your point, Carl, I think this stuff can all be digitally manipulated. And we've seen the deep fakes. We understand that you can alter timestamps by, you know, messing with the system clock in the BIOS, right? Like the smart people can do things to mess with this stuff that will make it less than reliable, but they're absolutely going to use it to bring you in for questioning if they have suspicions.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the deepfake angle, because of course you instantly, I go there too, right, to think about that. But there's actual initiatives happening around countering deepfakes that is kind of an unrelated thread to this story, but I'm going to pull it in and say, you know, Adobe is really working on a lot of their content authentication initiatives in order to be able to verify the creation time, the creation place, and the creation person of data. Microsoft's part of their collaborative group. They've announced a bunch of stuff that I was talking about recently at Business of Tech, which is exactly this, where they've enabled some Azure services to allow you to stamp your content and then have created plugins for the browsers to actually be able to verify the stamps on those, on that content, so that you can know when it was digitally signed and when it wasn't. I think the pieces are all here to allow you to know and create data over time that is authenticated and authenticatable as a way. And for example, everyone's always, we may pick this up a little bit later, you know, people are always talking about blockchain. It's like, well, here's one place,
right,
where it might actually be really useful.
Because
if we can actually start creating data that is verified and that is something that we can actually hold on to and use, I do think that it has some of these applications, but we've got to answer these questions up front, because we already see the weakening in general of video and being able to manipulate this stuff. We're going to have to address both angles of it. I do think it'll end up being used, though, with those authenticated mechanisms.
It's interesting to me because one version of this that we've all been living with for about 15 years, even though most people don't realize it until you put it together. You know, you've got a computer in your car that tracks how fast you're going, whether you were pressing on the brake, turning left, had your turn signal on, all that kind of stuff. There are insurance companies that give you discounts if you let them tap into that. And I say tap into it, right? But maybe there's some way that I can get lower insurance if I do certain things in my house, right? There are insurance companies that will sell you monitoring widgets that you place one next to your washer. So if it overflows, an alert goes out to them, and you know, you put them in different places and you hook them up to your smoke alarm and whatever. But maybe there's some piece of that, you know, just if I think the government's coming after me, maybe I want Siri to be my alibi.
See, and I think if you put both of you guys, your analysis together, you get what I think is the proper application. It can be verified technologically beyond the manipulation, and it is voluntary for your monetary and or functional benefit. That rules out the blanket of video coverage that's out there. And I can speak to this firsthand, right? We live in a house with a Ring doorbell, which I find to be both useful and functional and absolutely not connected to any network device in my house, because I do not trust what they're going to do with the data or how they are or are not able to protect their own systems. But it does give me that practical benefit. Now, you turn that around. The police have made a very keen statement that your Ring video evidence is not admissible at present in any criminal proceedings, up to and including, I got a video of that guy walking through my driveway. I know exactly who, I don't have to tell you, about 6 feet tall and brown hair and possibly Caucasian. I got video of this guy, and the police say, no, thank you. At present, we will not accept that stuff. I think the privacy angle on blanket video is going to make that one much harder to do. But I love the sensor idea for my protection inside my own house.
Well, and if I have control over it, I mean, that's the other bit, is where I have control of it and I can authenticate it and I can understand it. Like, I see the pieces to this, but I think we're not there yet.
You know, so I think if you accept it under those terms, then what happens if suddenly the legal system says, okay, that's legit. All right. So now I'm going to use that for you because you're on parole. I need to make sure you're in your house, you know, or that you can't be out of sight of one of these cameras for more than so much time, because then you could be more than a mile away from your house or, you know, whatever.
So it's an interesting way of thinking about it. And I'll kind of throw back to saying, I want to latch onto our idea of choice. If your choice is incarceration or parole under these parameters, you are making some level of choice as an individual human being. Like, so for example, your punishment angle there is kind of interesting, because of course, if you're incarcerated for something, you are serving a prison term. If what we're saying as a society is we're going to be more generous with that in exchange for technology invasion, you know, maybe you'll get the freedom you're getting is to be able to move around at the expense of the data monitoring. If the individual has that, I'm comfortable with it. Like individual personal control, if it is state imposed where it will be this, that's where I think I push back and say, I think we have to reexamine it.
Little brother instead of big brother. I'm very much on board with that concept.
I do think Dave touched on the future, which is that if this becomes somehow, you know, Bitcoin encrypted, where I could say, look, I want to subpoena your Siri data so that I can demonstrate that you were doing this or that, but I can't get it from you. I need to get it from Apple, right? I need them to verify from their database in very much the same way that you would seal up a PC and do a read-only copy of the hard drive, right? I need that version, and I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, although the one thing I will say is you brought up an interesting angle again to this is that it's been my experience so far that digging into that when it goes through the court system and a subpoena or a warrant is issued for that, it's been my experience to looking at these cases, not through research, but just anecdotally, that tends to play out the way you would want it to. That a judge has thought about it, it goes in front of a person, they're making a determination, and then data is collected, and then it's demanded. That process tends to make it go more smoothly.
Very good. Well, let us hope so. I want that to be the smooth future.
Here's hoping.
All right, so topic number two, and this is one that it jumped out for technological reasons, but also for a little bit of you got to be kidding me reasons, right? So we're going to attach this article here, which I find to be very practical in our world today. We live in a pandemic separated and distanced world. Most companies are not yet back into the office, but many are beginning to go in that direction. There's research that was recently cited that said 35% of companies that are out there still have no timeline whatsoever for when they will get back to work. But there are technologies now that are being marketed that will help you get back to work a little bit more orderly, a little bit more safely, a little bit more distanced. And these technologies come with some pretty significant brand names, right? Alphabet, Microsoft, Salesforce. These are not what you would typically consider to be healthcare companies, but they are leveraging database infrastructure and employee location and movement to identify who's where, when, and then track the distancing. I'm quite encouraged by a number of these technologies beyond just temperature sensing, which, because, you know, we know that that's not exactly the end all be all of indicators. There are some very interesting ways to stitch together the location of people in a working environment. I'm curious to see what we think on this one about the ethics, because the ethics and the you got to be kidding me part of this is, Those companies that I just mentioned that are selling this technology, we all do realize that literally zero of them are bringing their employees back to the office right now, right? Like Microsoft says, work from home forever, but we'll sell you technology if you want to go back to work.
or have to be fair. But let me observe something that just from a big market perspective for everybody. Like, look, if you are surprised that Alphabet, Microsoft, Salesforce, I'll add Amazon, who's not in this particular one, but of course, they're all looking at big markets like healthcare, because at their size and scope, these are some of the few markets that are big enough to help them continue to hit their growth targets. They are so big that in order to grow at the pace that the market wants them to do, there are not a ton of industries you can do that in. Healthcare is one of them, education's another, and government is the third one. Like, you've got to recognize that they are coming for healthcare because they need more revenue to fuel the machine.
It's also something they can sell direct to individuals and circumvent, like, I don't care what Kaiser wants. I don't care what your insurance company wants, right? I can go to your company, sell you this service. Everybody gets a little feel good. And now you feel like you can go back to the office. And they're not subject to HIPAA, right? Microsoft is not selling you any kind of data or anything that would require them to maintain your personal records. Okay. Now it becomes, you know, a question, well, is, you know, whatever that company is that they subcontract to, are they collecting my personal data? Are they subject to HIPAA? Is my employer subject to HIPAA?
I will observe from a technology perspective, I kind of instinctively like the idea of a company like Salesforce thinking about healthcare at some level, because if you assume the system of there is a customer buyer relationship in healthcare, which is certainly true in the US, if I am a consumer, I do want the providers to have better ability to manage their interaction with me, which, by the way, as a general rule, is pretty bad right now. So these companies that are good at customer management, customer experience, if they're thinking about the ways to apply this technology to make the experience better, I do like elements of that. Like, there's a piece to that saying, if we're looking at an industry that does need some help, healthcare is distinctly one of them where I'd like to see a better experience. Now,
yeah, I totally agree with that, right? And Carl, you touched on where I was going, right? The fact that it's taking that verification process and putting it into the hands of the individual instead of the institution, I really like that idea. A digital, verified, secure, blockchained, right? Let's add some layers to this, layer of data that I am in control of that is more than just, I promise I don't have any symptoms.
Right.
And if that turns into a digital health passport that allows me to go places and do things as close to normal as possible, that starts to become very, very interesting. But you're right. It does get your health records into the hands of many more people who are not presently legally endowed to be HIPAA compliant.
And it also raises certain opportunities and warnings as well. I mean, I would love to see in a world after the pandemic that we learn the lesson, please do not come to work if you have the cold or the flu. Like, do not get everybody else in the office sick.
Oh, please.
One of my pet peeves from day one. And if you could basically say, look, you know, every Monday, you know, on the way into the office, you know, this company's going to stick a pencil up your nose or whatever, and we're going to find out whether or not you're sick. I think there are companies who would be happy to do that, because if they could just get people to stay home, not sorry, you know, you got the flu, you don't feel bad, but go work from home while you can, and just don't show up in the office. Where do you work? We could have that world post pandemic, but I don't know how widespread it'll be.
Please, more.
I would put a big amen on that one, Carl, because I think our society has arrived at a point where we just default to, well, I can't afford to stay home and I'm going to fall behind at work. Therefore, of course you go to work when you're sick. We wear it like a badge of honor. I haven't taken a sick day in 7 years.
Right.
Please take a sick day. I think all of us will be more productive, and businesses can count real actual ROI on that productivity if the people who are sick keep working, but they work from home where they're not infecting anybody else. And in case you're wondering, we've validated in the last 6 months, that's totally viable.
The whole thing of I haven't taken a sick day in 30 years, that's literally, to me, it's the same as saying, I haven't tapped my brakes to let somebody pull in front of me on the freeway in 30 years. What I want is all that actually matters. So
all the parts of it. Look, I mean, we would be remiss if we didn't observe there is obviously some people looking to solve certain circumstances where you have to have people physically together, where even during this game, and there is technology to be leveraged to make that better. I think Ryan's right to highlight the fact that lots of the companies are selling this, not so much themselves physically back together. And that is at least worth observing. The, you know, if you're not eating your own dog food, horrible phrase, that, you know, you've at least got to recognize that maybe the reason they're doing this is they just are selling the opportunity. But that's not to say that there isn't options here for those thinking about ways of leveraging this technology. I do have to highlight the opportunity.
And every time you say the word technology, the dollar sign lights up. Boop, boop, right? This is opportunity because somebody's implementing that technology. And whether it is moving the data, storing the data, securing the data, you need an IT consultant to make sure that's done the right way. And because it's one thing to say, oh, we got all this data. I'm like, yeah, unless it's been infected or, you know, corrupted or the backup didn't work or whatever. So.
And in a very tactical and positive way, you can source a lot of this stuff at distribution today. Like this is not fantasy technology. This is not maybe at some point in the future technology. This is, there are devices, there are sensors, there are integration opportunities, there are subscription software platforms. This stuff is here right now. I agree with Dave's premise. Maybe healthcare is a place where we can all find growth.
Well, we could beat on that one forever, but let's move into one which, I mean, I have to always laugh and go, anytime it starts with Bitcoin, you know, it's going to get interesting. But this one was a kind of the story we'll include, it was a Bloomberg article, and it talks about recently where a cryptocurrency miner actually powered down their data centers. And during that time window, the company was actually selling the electricity. On those hot days without any kind of wind, they were selling their power supplies back to the grid with profit. And at some level, they're realizing that, wait a second, you know, we're getting paid to produce bitcoins, or what is this actually the right use of their power? And I thought it was worth bringing up this kind of conversation about, like, well, what's the cost of these? If you're paying to produce the coins, are you actually doing it? What's the value of this? It does get into a larger conversation. Guys, what were your takes when we saw this one?
One of my longtime, I guess, obsessions is the connection between electricity and Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin consumes in some areas almost all of the electricity in a country or in a region, right? And if you look at all the spare electricity in certain provinces in Canada has been pre-sold to people who are mining Bitcoin, right? There, the connection is not casual. It is very, very strong. And so this really struck me as one of, like, wow, imagine that there's so much money, right? But when Bitcoin goes to $10,000 and it's still worth, you know, selling electricity instead, that means electricity is really ridiculously expensive. You know, these are two things that, at least for the short term, are wedded forever. But, you know, the other thing is, at some point, I firmly believe Bitcoin goes away and this becomes a non-issue. But that's my very, very personal opinion. So.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? I think there are practical and theoretical problems with the Bitcoin model. The fact that it's not attached to anything other than people's opinions, that means it's going to have wild fluctuations. And we have seen that, right? People who invested their life savings in Bitcoin made $1 million and then lost $2 million. And, you know, I mean, it is very, very wild fluctuations because it's not actually based on anything real. But the fact that it takes a physical asset in the real world to produce something in the digital world that is not real, that ought to stop and make technologists consider twice the decisions that they are making here. I believe that the blockchain back into this stuff is going to survive forever and ever. I think there will always be a little bit of an appetite for something like Bitcoin, but I personally don't believe Bitcoin itself will survive. I just think it's got such a radically unsustainable reputation that even just wild-eyed gamblers are like, yeah, you know, I like to take a risk every now and then, but I'd like to keep my $10,000 until this afternoon if I can.
What's really interesting is, as a technologist, we don't often talk about the costs of this in power terms on a regular basis. I know that I certainly don't think about it for the most part in terms of anything that I'm doing from a home office perspective, even home automation. You know, I laugh and go, I've always had a higher power bill, and I've never really thought about the why of my power bill. It just is. I think, you know, and not to get like, you know, we'll flirt with the political edge of this, where it's the like, look, if we're going to have conversations about energy usage and power consumption and where that flows into fuels and fossil fuels and climate change, like if you're going to, you actually do need to include that. Now, our previous efforts as an industry, anybody remember Green IT, will know that this, we've not done a particularly good job of tying this all together. I don't think that the reason it's going to happen or change is because of like the industry itself. I think it's going to become the imposition of government telling us what we have to do, or where power will get taxed more from those perspective. And it is a thread to think about in the coming days, months, years around,
you know, this, yeah, issue. I agree. And I think one of the things that's always struck me as a little odd is that certain things don't get discussed because of the economic structures that are already in place on top of them. And I'll give you a perfect example. You know, the old joke, like, you know, there really is no cloud. It's just somebody else's server. Okay, well, at some point that's true, but think about it another way. I remember the day that I moved all of my servers out of my server room and sent them off to a colocation facility. And what happened was my electric bill went down about $500 a month, right? Because all those servers and the air conditioner were on me. Now they're at the colo, and I basically saved enough money to pay for my, you know, half a cage at the colo. Well, and then you move it up to the cloud. You know, a server in the cloud still is a server. So it's like, you know, the cloud is really just somebody else's electricity, and you're paying for it in a different way. When I made that move, I thought, oh, this is so genius. I'm going to go to each of my clients. I'm going to measure all the usage of all their electricity and tell them, if you move this to the colo where I'm going to get a commission, you can save so many dollars a month. Every single client said, I don't care. My electricity is included in my rent. Right? So that great idea just went down the tubes, right? And so it's sort of interesting, and it's only tangential to Bitcoin, but this whole thing about the cost of electricity and how it plays into things, we don't ever address it directly. It's an invisible cost, right? And yes, I pay it in my rent, or I pay it directly, or I pay it through the colo, or I pay it through the cloud, but it's there. There is no such thing as free electricity.
Yeah, right? You're correct. It's an invisible expense, but it is an inseparable expense, right? You cannot run any application on-prem or in the cloud without consuming electricity, right? Many years ago, I remember being a pup in this industry and learning from an old man named Scott McNeely an automobile metaphor about integrated systems and technology. You might have the very most powerful engine in your car. You might have the very most comfortable bucket seats and the most sophisticated satellite navigation system, but if you don't have any gasoline in the tank, it's not going to produce any measurable results. From that, years ago, I learned the discipline of, you know, if you're selling the server, please, for the love, sell the rack, sell the heating, the air conditioning, the UPS system. Like, you can't run a car without tires. You can't run a data center without electricity. Please sell all of those things when you are doing that for the customer. But in a modern world, we have to admit, boy, that is tremendous environmental and economic weight that goes along with every one of these applications. I'm fascinated by the advances in processing capability, all of the things that we are doing at the server and data center level, I'm a great big fan of hyperconverged infrastructure and eliminating the physical spaces between our atoms to get that last 1% out of our technology performance. But holy cow, those things are a power suck. And if we don't consider those things, we're the ones who are causing that drain on the overall system.
Dude, you got a bunch of buzzwords in there. That was a good
string. Totally buzzword compliant.
Exactly. You hit like five or six in a row there. I just like, I'm going to end with that. Just going, dude, that was.
And they were even grammatically correct.
They were all strung together, but come on, listeners, Ryan hit like, there was gotta be a buzzer for like too many of them.
Digital transformation.
Oh.
And with that, we are out of here. Thank you for listening to episode 77 of the Killing It. Podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It Podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.